baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Honestly, man, I've just been all over the place this week with this team. Like, I watched the Jays game. They lose a close one. I calm myself down. I say something like, you know what? This team's still young. Maybe this isn't the year. This experience is all going to move this team forward in the end. The core needs this. And then I go to bed. I wake up in the morning. And then I'm like, you know what? Maybe we are still in this thing. Why don't I let my hope get up again so I can be crushed time after time?
Yep.
Sums it up, right? Like, that's kind of where we're at right now.
that sums it up perfectly. That's, on a broader scale, how I felt after the series against the Tigers.
Yeah.
Pretty bummed out.
And that's the thing, man. You look at this team, we're still only 5.5 games back of that second wildcard spot at the end of August. Like, we're still not, despite all these bad losses, this team refuses to fall right out of it, which would probably make my life a lot better. You know, just if I didn't need to constantly deal with the crushing blows.
No, absolutely. And I think that was the frustrating thing is, like, we split with the White Sox, and that's what we said we needed to do.
And that loss to the Tigers, man. Anyways, we're jumping way ahead here. We'll get all into this. Welcome, everybody, to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by Adam Mack. Thank you so much for joining us. Of course, the walk-off podcast. You can follow us on Instagram or at walk-off podcast on Twitter. Now, we are doing things a little bit differently now. What we're doing is, instead of bundling our guests together on the audio side with our news podcast that you're listening to right now, we've decided to separate those. We did interview Dara Harris of the High Performance Department with the Toronto Blue Jays on Monday. That is up on YouTube and where you get your podcasts right now, and was an incredibly interesting chat. She got right into the High Performance Department and what they're doing and rehabbing injuries, all sorts of great stuff. All of our guests are brought to you by YourRate.ca. Darren Brown, the mortgage broker, sure to help you get into that mortgage you're after, whether it's a new mortgage or you're looking to redo your current one. YourRate.ca. COVID-friendly, paperless, all online. So while we're speaking of guests here really quick, I did wish to bring up, we're really excited to have on the show, hopefully Tuesday, Wednesday. I know I'm supposed to reach out to him on Monday after the Detroit series, but Kevin Smith, third baseman with the Toronto Blue Jays and all-star with the Buffalo Bison for this season, hopefully joining us at some point next week. Stay tuned for that. We're going to get into where this team is at. We'll deep dive into Jose Berrios and whether we're panicking about him or not. Offense has dried up. Dickerson quietly having a very nice season with the Blue Jays. And Jordan Groshen's worth getting excited about. We'll also talk about the faceplant that the San Diego Padres are in the midst of. All right, buddy, let's get into this. So, like we said, 5.5 games back, this team has given us fans reasons to be excited, but no reason to truly think that they can put this together. And that's what we're kind of waiting for this team to do. 5.5 games back is a big enough hill that they got to start winning some games. And the offense has dried up.
That's the only way to put it.
The offense has dried up. And, I mean, they came out of it yesterday too little too late. They allowed 9 runs before they started swinging the bat themselves.
Out of curiosity, did you watch that whole game?
I did watch that whole game.
Oh, you're a better fan than I am. I tuned out when it was like 9-2.
Well, my internet was out, which is why we weren't able to live stream yesterday. My internet was out, and then it came back on when they were not down 9-2, and I threw the game on. I wasn't paying too much attention, and then, of course, I allowed myself to get all excited when they did start to come back, so that I could feel that pain at the end of the game. Because what is baseball without constantly feeling the pain at the end of the game, right, buddy?
Absolutely.
So Jose Berrios, definitely has struggled his last few times on the mound with this team. So my question to you, are you worried about Jose Berrios at this point? Put perspective on it. We're five games. He's had five starts with this team. Two of them off the top were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
His last three, he has struggled. One of those against the White Sox was a team that owned him for three starts with the Twins in July, of course, in the same division. The Twins and White Sox are Central Division rivals, so they know Berrios well. And there is a human side to think, too, right? I mean, mm-hmm. new stadium, new team, new city, new clubhouse. Everything is different, so there is that. So are you worried?
No. And just because I'm going to play the small sample size card.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at his career numbers, you think he's just going to find it. It's what he's done his whole career.
Yeah. I want to look at his season totals next year and then look back and decide. I don't know. I'm not panicked. I'm frustrated. And
yeah.
Do I have confidence in his next start to be a good one? Probably not. But it could bounce back. I don't know. Right now, my concern is about a 3 out of 10.
Yeah, okay. That's about where I'm at, too. And you look at Ryu, and I kind of feel about the same. You know, 3 out of 10 on the concern level. He hasn't been great since June. You know, he had that rough June and kind of pulled himself out of it. But since June, I think his ERA is a little bit north of 4,
mm-hmm.
which is not ace status. Luckily, Robbie Ray has grabbed that ball and ran with it. The guy has been unreal.
Serious Cy Young contender for Robbie Ray?
I would say so. I don't think he wins it, but I think he gets plenty of votes. I think that he comes in second.
I think he's leading the AL in strikeouts now. I think he passed.
Did
Garrett
he pass Cole,
Cole
finally? Good.
I think
for
he's
him.
One
he
up
did
on
have
him.
14 his last outing. Maybe he is the number one contender for Cy Young. The fact, buddy, that he led the league in walks last year and isn't even on the list, walks nobody now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, my goodness. Talk about finding it.
Well, according to ESPN, 2021 AL Cy Young predictor, Robbie Ray is not even on the top 10. But
okay.
I'm going to chalk that up to it being Toronto.
Yes. Okay. I mean, he's in the top 10. That's crazy.
Has to
look
be.
At his numbers. I mean, his numbers are top 10. So why, you know, like, especially with how he has ramped up recently. We're seeing Robbie Ray go 7 or 8 innings. That's insane.
No, absolutely.
That is insane. He has been a godsend for this team, man. It has been unreal. And I don't know where you're at right now.
Sorry, let me just jump in here.
Yes.
According to MLB.com, Cy Young predictors, Robbie Ray is in third place right now.
Okay.
So Garrett Cole is first, Lance Lynn is second, and Robbie Ray is third.
Which is funny, because I think I'd put Lance Lynn even ahead of Garrett Cole, but that could just be my dislike of the Yankees. But Lance Lynn is putting himself together a heck of a season here with that White Sox team. His ERA is just lights out.
His ERA is 2.2. Garrett Cole's ERA, 2.92. And Robbie Ray's ERA is 2.72. So Lance Lynn has a significantly lower ERA. Then Robbie
it must
Ray
just be the strikeouts, eh? Cole strikes out enough guys that
exactly so
that gets everyone all hot and bothered.
I mean, but when Garrett Cole has a higher ERA than Robbie Ray by 0.2, and Robbie Ray has more strikeouts, I mean it's by 1, but still, I don't know. I think Robbie Ray has a serious shot, but again, he plays on the Blue Jays, so that's just one of those things. Like, when you play on the Yankees, you get more respect from the voting, the voters at large.
That
right?
man is going to get paid.
Oh yeah,
this offseason. 29 years old, going into 30 year 30 season next year. I think he turns 30 in October.
Yeah,
and I think he'll get 4 to 5 years at least $20 million a year. Like, the guy's going to make six digit. What is that? 100 million?
Nine digit.
Thank you. You're like,
six digit is the not six even digit
for sure is not $100 million, Scott. Okay, so let's get back to this offense, which is struggling. Now, one thing I think that we all need to keep in mind with this young core, the Bows, the Vladdies, even Lourdes Gurriel, is that they have never played a 162-game season in the big leagues, right? Like, Bo called up end of 2019, shortened 2020 season. Like, 60 games is nothing. It's a third of what these guys are doing right now, little more than a third. And that's the thing with 162 games. I'm not even saying that a guy like, because I think the problem Vladdy is having right now is he's hit a bit of a wall, and I do not think that that is physical. I do not think, obviously, the physicality of it is an aspect, but I think it's just mentally these guys are worn out. And this is why they talk about the dog days of summer.
Mm-hmm.
End of August, where you're just like, all of a sudden, everything seems harder.
It's a grind.
It's a grind. And I know we talked to Jimmy Van Ostrin, right? He was with Ben Freakley, a part of that mental performance team with the Blue Jays. He's the big bearded guy on the bench, for those of you who sometimes see the clubhouse and you're like, who is that guy? That's Jimmy Van Ostrin. And he's with the mental performance team, and he's there to try and ease the mental burden on these guys in any way that he can. And that was one thing that really stood out to me when we brought up to him what the mental performance team is all about. And this is what Jimmy said. He said along the lines, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, the rigors of 162 games is something that these guys have never, ever been through, and we're trying to prepare them for it and be there for them when they do hit a wall. And that, I think, is where they're at. And can they work their way past that? That's what this is all about. And that's huge for this core, even if they do not wind up in the wild card spot at the end of 2021, is learning how to push through that. That's going to be invaluable down the road here for guys like Vladdy, 22 years old, who sure may at 18 have played 120 games or whatever it was in double A. It does not compete to 162 in the big leagues. Are you noticing it, man? Like, I'm watching even guys like Kirk, and people have been hounding Alejandro about a lack of hustle. I don't think it's a lack of hustle. I think it's literally they're just bagged, and you're starting to see it. I'm not making excuses. Obviously, they're tired is not something fans are going to accept. But it is something to keep in mind with a 21-year-old like Kirk or a 22-year-old like Vladdy who have never been through this before, that there's some toughening up about it.
Yes, I think on top of that, the Jays had arguably the hardest experience this year between the three different home stadiums.
Yeah.
I think that has to be a factor.
I would agree, man, and that is a human side to the things that sometimes we forget.
Just when, like, even when you're at home, you're still in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever the case may be, right? You're renting an apartment or whatever. It's different than when you're actually going home. So
there's no place to rejuvenate. You know, like, they finally get back to Toronto, and even Toronto at this point doesn't feel like home because they're kind of just playing it out. Right? I don't know, man.
Absolutely.
It's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this season plays out, because you know who's still performing right now? Teoscar Hernandez, Marcus Semien. The guys who have been through 162 before. It's the guys who mentally know what to expect. That's a big thing with this too, right? Is you don't know how your brain's going to react until you've gone through it. You don't know what works for you to overcome that mental fatigue until you've gone through it. So I think a lot of this is just a very valuable learning experience that this team had to learn at some time. It's too bad that they're learning it in the midst of it while we're in a pseudo playoff race, but
great.
Something I did want to bring up because I got a kick out of it on Twitter is when it was announced that they are doing, Mike Wilner put on Twitter that the Jays are doing bunt practice. And the the guys practicing their bunting was Santiago Espinal, Reese McGuire, Josh Palacios, Valera, and Kevin Smith. Breivik Valera, of course, he was pinch hit for, but Kirk was up to bat and they pinch hit Valera to try and bunt, and then that didn't work out. So they were out there practicing it. And a lot of people, it surprised me, hated this. They did not like that they were practicing the bunt.
Really?
They think that bunting shouldn't be done at all. Where do you stand on small ball and this sort of thing? Because I know with all the guys that I just mentioned, those are the guys I want practicing bunts. You know, those are the guys that I'm like, yes, make it so the guys that are hitting 7, 8, and 9 can, if they need to, lay down a bunt and move a runner up. Where do you feel on that? Where do you stand?
Yeah, absolutely. Bunting is part of the game, or it should be.
Yeah.
The value in a bunt is, if done properly, it should have at least 80 or 90% success rate, right?
Even if we go low, let's say 70%, which
sure.
means that the best hitters in the league who hit 350, like we're talking the most elite hitters, you're doubling the chance of moving the runner from first to second.
That's the thing, is with a bunt, you eliminate a double play as an option.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you double the chances of them...
put the guy in scoring position.
Moving them up, right? So it's just so frustrating, Scott, to keep continuing to see the eighth inning. We start with a runner on first and then can't cash him in.
Yep.
Or we've had a few innings where we get the first two guys on base. We have a runner on first
nothing.
And second. And you go, well, here we go.
Yeah.
And nothing. I don't know. That's how you win in the playoffs. Like,
and I mean, that's been the last 2 weeks, is the Jays just kill their own momentum.
You're not going to win too many baseball games in the playoffs, 13-10. So you got to figure out how to win these 3-1 games. Yeah.
Corey Dickerson, while we're looking for bright spots on this team, has been quietly a very nice surprise for this team. Now, Corey Dickerson, he, in his last 15 games, has put up an OPS of 976 with this team, which is pretty impressive. And even his numbers since he joined the Jays have been decent. You've got his stats in front of you, I'm guessing, Adam.
So in 20 games with the Blue Jays, he has 60 plate appearances, hitting .263, which is well above league average. With an OPS of 826.
Which is also way above average.
Yeah, 3 home runs, 11 RBIs in 20 games is very impressive.
He had a home run off the bench, pinch hit home run. He's been excellent in the field. Something he's always done well is defensive acumen with his glove.
Mm-hmm.
He plays left field. He plays right field. Corey Dickerson might be a candidate to stick around on this team, especially if they're moving on from, I don't know if you'd get much in return, but maybe they're done with a Randall Grishuk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where this team goes from here outfield-wise, but Corey Dickerson definitely making a case for him to be considered a guy that they bring in for another year.
Why not? He's only 32.
He's not old. And he's one thing I am impressed with Dickerson is every time they need and this is going to be just the most stereotypical sports thing to say, but whenever they need a professional at bat, he provides that. He's not out there. He's not Randall Grishuk striking out in 3 straight pitches, right? He's at least making the pitcher work for it, which is all you can ask.
Absolutely.
Okay, man. Let's shift gears here a little bit because there is a catching crunch. And we bring this up, it seems like once a month there's a catching crunch with this team. because they've got three catchers that have kind of been alternating, getting injured and then coming back, and they need a spot on the 40-man roster. So right now, Jansen is very close to being ready to join this team again. He's had some rehab assignments.
Let's give Danny Jansen credit. He is a top five catcher in this organization.
He is a top five catcher. He is a top five catcher with this Blue Jays team, yes. Do you think he deserves a 40-man? Let's start with this, okay? Let's go over what these three catchers have done. Alejandro Kirk, Reese McGuire, and Danny Jansen. So let's start with Jansen, who's working his way back from an injury.
Okay.
Where's his, you've got the stat up there. I know I've got it here too somewhere.
For Danny Jansen?
Yeah.
In 49 games.
Okay.
Batting average of 176.
Not good.
I think it starts and ends there. For him anyways.
Yeah. No power this year.
No power.
He's had what? 4 or 5 home runs?
5 home runs, yep.
5 home runs.
He's a good fielder.
Yeah, he's good defensively.
Calls a good game, sure. Doesn't have much of an arm, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
He doesn't throw base runners out.
I mean, if you're got any sort of speed and you get on with Danny Jansen behind the plate, I'd run.
No, absolutely.
And we'll shift to Kirk here, but I would run on, or to McGuire, I mean. Let's shift to McGuire.
Right, so Reese McGuire.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, Reese McGuire through 67 games with the Blue Jays is hitting .267. So, again, well above league average, especially for a catcher. He only has one home run, so less power than Danny Jansen, but is, I guess I would say, arguably the best defensive catcher on our team.
Mm-hmm. I know he's throwing out 38% of runners, which he's the only guy in this organization. And I'm, when I say organization, I know Gabriel Moreno is coming, but let's just kind of do a blanket statement. When I say organization, I mean guys who have played professional big league ball. Okay. So like on the big league team. I know, obviously, Double A is professional ball, but I just mean with the actual Jays team. He's the only one who can keep runners in check. Has been all year. Because I know that's another struggle of Alejandro Kirk, is that he cannot seem to get guys to stop running, and when they do run on him, they have success.
Yeah.
Let's look at Kirk's offense, which is one big plus of him.
So he is hitting through 36 games, .277, with an OPS of almost 800 and 3 home runs, 15 RBI.
Okay. So again, and this is the thing. Alejandro Kirk's honeymoon phase with this fan base, I think, is over. We are starting to hear some retractors and some negative things being said about him, which if you were to rewind about 6 months would be blasphemous amongst this fan base. So Kirk is starting to show some of his weaknesses, and they are what we knew they were all along, which is that he's 21 years old. He has very little big league experience. He is struggling on the defensive side of things when it comes to keeping runners in check. He is calling a better game than maybe he was originally given credit for at the beginning of the year. So he's learning and progressing with experience, which is something you do like to see. He is god awful on the base path. Just
A liability.
A liability on the base path. He's a guy who, when he hits a single and gets to first, if the next hitter doesn't hit into a double play, I'm like, success, all right. Which is not really what you want, right? Kirk has hit for a little less power than maybe was expected. Still hitting lots of doubles. He's getting his extra base hits. So when I say power, I do mean strictly home runs on this.
Right.
And I mean, he still has... And this is where if he hadn't got injured, maybe instead of 3 home runs, he'd be at 9. But I don't think much more than that. He hasn't shown that he's a 20 home run hitter in a year. This season anyways. I'm not... again, he is 21 and I'm not discounting how much progress he can make. But he's kind of showing that I don't know if he is the catcher of the future, and we've already known this, that Moreno is kind of the guy that has been pegged as that guy. But I think a lot of us thought Kirk could maybe play his way into that, and he hasn't really done that. Listen, he has had some very clutch hits, and that single that he scored in that, what was it, Wednesday's game against the White Sox to kind of get that go-ahead run and basically won the game for us. Super clutch. Incredible hitting. Didn't try and do too much, stayed within himself, popped one over the left or over the second baseman's head into center field to score that go-ahead run. Great. And I'm not shitting on Kirk. But where are you at on this, man? Like, I kind of feel like Reese McGuire has earned himself a spot. Does Kirk go down and do they call Jansen back up? Or do we ride with three catchers in September? Once there's a couple extra roster spots. Do you wish to use roster spots on a Danny Jansen?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah, man. I'm kind of in the same boat where I'm... I do know. Personally, I think just leave Danny where he's at right now almost. But you know this club's not going to do that. Organizationally, they've already shown how much trust they have in Jansen, and I think he's going to be called up as soon as he's ready. But then what do you do catching-wise?
It's... I don't know. Honestly, I don't know, Scott.
Any of these catchers are our go-to guy next year?
For me, it would be Reese McGuire.
Yeah?
He's the only one that I feel...
The lefty bat helps, too.
Lefty bat helps. Left-handed bat. Yeah. I feel like he plays hard. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it just, there's that intangible energy to Reese McGuire, I guess. Like, it just feels like, yeah, I don't know, Scott. I know with Alejandro Kirk that it just is sure frustrating when I don't know what to say about Kirk.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know how to feel about him. One thing that maybe I shouldn't be harping on, but man, him on the base paths is not exciting baseball. I don't like watching him hit a single and get to first base and be like, okay, well, we need a triple to score him.
Mm-hmm.
And a hard hit ball, he could wind up being an out.
Yeah,
he's just so slow on those base paths, man. Anyways, this is the least sexy chat we could have is our catching position chat. You know, like
no kidding.
There's nothing really to get excited about, and I mean, don't get me wrong, Gabriel Moreno, very exciting coming down mm-hmm. the pike here. So I guess, would you like to see them go out and get a veteran catcher next year?
I've been screaming for.
You're like,
JT Realmuto all off season was the guy I saw catching as our biggest hole. I'm glad mm-hmm. Springer is here, but I definitely wanted Realmuto. That was my number one priority.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. I guess.
Yeah.
Like, just everything about catcher is frustrating to me.
I agree, man. I agree. And it's been a frustrating year catching-wise for this club because it has tended to have been a black hole offensively for months at a time. For months at a time, offensively, our catching position has just been a no-go on this team. We will move on from there, but Gabriel Moreno cannot come up fast enough. And personally, I think 2022... it's time for them to maybe sit down and consider bringing in a guy in his 30s who has done it before and can kind of lead this team. And I'm not saying that Danny Jansen isn't a good leader. I'm not saying Alejandro Kirk isn't a good catcher. It's just like you look at some of the holes on this team catching-wise, And it just feels like they could use a veteran presence. I think it would do this team a lot of good. While we're speaking of prospects here, I know we brought up Moreno. I do wish to quickly touch on Jordan Groshans, obviously. We brought up Jose Berríos and the fact that he has struggled a little bit the last three games. Neither Adam and I are panicking. However, it would be nice to see him step up, especially with the prospect load that they paid to get him. Austin Martin, the number one prospect in this Jays system when they traded him. Or, I mean, I guess technically behind Nate Pearson, but... Simeon Woods Richardson, one of the top pitching prospects given up. And one thing that has stood out to me since they were traded, July 31st, Jordan Groshans has been on fire in Double A. He was heating up when they traded Martin, and he has not cooled down. It will be very interesting to see what the Jays decide to do with him for this last month of the minor league season. There is a hole at third base with the Bison. Kevin Smith being up with the big club right now.
You think he gets bumped up?
Do they make that move to AAA? Do they move Groshans up? I can see them possibly doing that. But my question to you, Adam, is do you think... I mean, he's 23. So this mentally might actually have... The show of confidence in him may have actually made a big difference, because let's face it, with them trading Austin Martin, they basically were like, you're our guy, Jordan.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. I mean,
yeah.
He was getting hot before the trade.
He was.
But yeah, I mean,
his numbers have been ridiculous. He's hitting .350. Since the trade.
Wow.
Right?
That's
impressive big number.
So maybe that's why Kevin Smith is with the Jays right now, is to make room for Martin to...
Groshans on that AAA team.
For
very Groshans likely
to see some harder pitching. And
Kevin Smith earned it too. I mean, the guy... I mean, truthfully, he was in MVP talks
in
for
AAA.
The AAA. Mm-hmm. League.
Give me a probability here, Scott. Jordan Groshans makes the Blue Jays next year out of spring training. Is that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I feel like it is. Okay. I feel like it is. 15%?
All right, that's kind of what I was thinking was.
Because he'd have to, like, he would have to rip it up in spring training, I think. For them to move his... I think they see Jordan Groshans as a call-up in May or June. I just don't think they see him as the... And who knows what this team does, dude. There's all this rumors of Jose Ramirez, and they've been kind of targeting him. And, you know, like, third base might not be an option depending on what they sign in free agency, but...
I don't
know.
He could
force his way onto this team.
We'll see, right? If he finishes the year in AAA this year and finishes strongly, and then...
Mm-hmm.
And then dominates AAA in April. Who knows?
Do we wish to talk manager? Are we done with this whole... I keep seeing on Twitter people bringing up John Gibbons.
Ugh.
I know. Thank you for that reaction. Dear God, we do not need Gibby back for a third time. All right? Like, listen, I love him, especially now, right now, 2021, looking back, being like, oh, yeah, Gibby was great. Did I love John Gibbons? Like, I'll be very honest. In 2015, before they made their big push, did I like John Gibbons? No, I did not. He was good with the bullpen. He was probably the manager they needed for that 2015 and 2016 team, because he was a very hands-off dude and it was a very mature club. Would I like to see John Gibbons get his hand on this team? No.
Not at all. Not at all. No, don't bring
it.
So
if they are going to move on from Charlie, do they do it? I guess the question is, do they do it from within? Casey Kendall has been great with the AAA Bisons. He's an option. John Schneider. Or is Charlie the guy? Because he is under contract till 2022. And we've brought this up before, Adam, right? That it is a super collaborative group. And, like, to just throw Charlie under the bus is kind of turning a blind eye to what Atkins and Shapiro is all about, which is group meetings and group decisions.
Yeah, I don't know, Scott. I don't know what we do for manager. I do feel like Charlie's not the answer, but I do also feel like there isn't just a golden class of managers in free agency that we can go cherry pick current. Like,
yeah, there's no AJ Hinches out there.
No.
And I don't think that this is the type of front office that is going to shock the baseball world like the White Sox did and go out and wind up getting a Buck Showalter or an old school manager. I don't get the feeling or the sense that that is the direction that they wish to be in. And even if you do make a managerial change here, let's say you do go outside of the organization and bring in, and I know we keep bringing him up because he was on the show, great guy, Canadian hero, first base coach for the St. Louis Cardinals, won the AAA Manager of the Year in 2018 and 17 in that Cardinals organization, Stubby Clapp. But if we'd bring in a guy like Stubby, what happens then? Because, you know, you bring in a new manager, they like to bring their crew with them. Does that mean we're moving on from John Schneider and Guillermo Martinez? And, like, there's a list of guys that are Charlie's boys.
Mm-hmm.
Are we moving on from that? Or are we promoting from within? Does John Schneider all of a sudden become the guy? And basically nothing changes coaching-wise?
That's a good question. I mean, if you shake it up too much, good things can happen and so can bad, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like this whole episode, I'm just throwing non-answers at you. I don't know what to do with our catching situation. I don't know what to do with our managing and coaching situation. I'm sure it's making for great listening. But
everyone's like, well, Adam doesn't know. Yeah. But
has Adam even had his coffee yet?
In your defense, nobody knows.
No.
Like, that's why we look at this team and we're like, where is this team at? Like, they're not good enough to be a playoff team right now, I don't think. But they're also not bad enough where you're like, do we dismantle this? Coaching-wise, I mean, do we move on in a different direction? And I don't think this front office is there yet. Personally, I think Charlie is here until 2023. And I could be way off on that.
Sorry, when you say until 2023, like more seasons of Charlie?
They let him finish his contract.
One more season. Okay. Sorry. Clarify that for me one more time.
He manages next year. He manages next year. 2022.
Okay. Sorry, I always get confused with the numbers.
No. So, you know, I just mean that come 2023, they would move on and bring in a new manager and maybe a new coaching team.
Right.
But who knows? Who knows, dude? This team does have the offensive power to, if they for some reason manage to put it together and can. Now, this team has never done anything this season to make me believe they can win 10 in a row. But if they can, right, this is a whole different story. And then that saves Charlie's job for sure. If they wind up squeaking into that second wildcard spot, Charlie's going nowhere, buddy. Like,
yeah, no, you're probably right about that.
Did you have anything else Blue Jays-wise to talk about here before we move on to the MLB?
Nothing else Blue Jays-wise, no.
Okay. Should we talk San Diego and the free fall that the Padres have been in?
Yeah, that'll make us feel better about ourselves.
Right, let's put it all in perspective for Blue Jays fans here. So the Padres, who were the best team in Major League Baseball for the first couple months of the season, are now sitting two games back of that second wildcard spot behind the Cincinnati Reds, who refuse to go away. And their August has single-handedly kind of put them behind the eight ball here. You got the record up?
I do. The San Diego Padres record in August is 8-14, which is bad, but they started August 6-2. Since then,
they are
2-12. Two wins in their last 14 games, my friend.
Wow.
Wow was right. This is a team who was in a pretty handily in a wild card spot.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks ago.
Well, this is where winning the offseason doesn't necessarily do it for you. I know it was kind of proclaimed by baseball analysts around MLB that the Blue Jays and the Padres won the offseason. And here we are, both teams sitting outside the wild card race. Both teams still right in it. I mean, the Padres are two games back is nothing. The Padres are still right in there. They just can't continue to win one game for every seven they lose.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They need to do a little bit better than that.
And the Mets have been ugly too, man. The Mets is another team that they were in first place in that NL East until mid-July.
Yeah,
and they've kind of fallen way out.
They are now 6-18 in August, with only three wins in their last 14 games.
And a large part of this is their pitching has just all of a sudden gone south. Marcus Stroman's been incredible for them. Jacob DeGrom, obviously a world-breaking, like a world-beating pitcher. Like, he's a guy who, if he retired tomorrow, he's a Hall of Famer the day after type of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, but without DeGrom, and it looks like it kind of looks like he's done for the season, is what it's looking like.
Well, especially if they aren't a playoff contender, why would you rush him back?
Why push him back?
So,
which is a bummer for the Mets, and it's honestly just bad news for baseball in general, because he is the most impressive pitcher in the entire league right now.
Yep.
Like, let's look at his numbers. And his numbers are insane, and he hasn't even pitched in a month.
Right, so he's at 146 strikeouts, which is just wild.
How many innings has he pitched?
Only 92.
Wow. So he's striking out two out of every three batters he's facing.
Basically, yeah.
That is elite.
Yeah, strikeouts per nine is 14.5 right now. Wow. So it's absurd. I mean,
it's completely absurd. What's his ERA at? Is it?
His ERA is 1.08.
One. He allows one run every time he's on the mound. One run every nine innings. No wonder the Mets are missing him.
Baseball is missing him. That's
baseball
for sure.
Baseball is missing him. Absolutely. All right, my man, let's wrap it up there. Or do you have...
I just want to say one more thing about the Blue Jays here. Last week, we were looking at this schedule ahead with Detroit, Chicago... Detroit and Baltimore kind of leading us into September to finish off our August. We said the Jays needed to go 9-4. We went 3-4 against Detroit and Chicago. So we got to go 6-0. We got to win six straight here against
to be where we want to be at. Yeah.
To be where we want to be at. So we got the Tigers.
No, this Jays team, I mean, we said this last week. Do or die. This is it. Well, it really is. This team has to either start winning or they're out. Because 5.5 games back is by no means the end. And I don't think that any true baseball analyst would look at the Jays and be like, oh, they're done. Sure, mathematically they can do it, but they're done. Like, they still have a shot. But all leeway, they've used up all their leeway.
They have used up all their leeway. The good news... is, I mean, you talk about Jays need to win 10 in a row. Can we win 10 straight? This is the stretch of the schedule to do it.
Yes.
You know, I know Detroit has been better, and I know they
Doesn't
were frustrating
matter.
For us last week, but we need to sweep the Tigers, we need to sweep the Orioles, and then we got Oakland coming to town, and they've been struggling lately too.
Yeah. This is the time for this team to put it all together, as we've said a few times throughout the cast here.
Here's our next nine games.
I don't
know
if they can, but we'll see.
This is our next nine games. Three against Detroit, three against Baltimore, three against Oakland, and then off to New York for four.
They need to win 10 of those 13.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean... we'll keep saying this every week until it's over, but it's do or die, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, I don't know. I still have a little bit in me is optimistic that we can rattle off.
I know, I'm the worst. I still have hope, which is just the worst thing you can do.
Like, let's just rattle off 7 out of 8 in the next 9 games here.
Yeah.
And feel confident going into New York, and then anything can happen, right?
But you know what, man? Here we are on the upside coming into September, and this team is still technically in it. So, you know what? It's not what us Blue Jays fans wanted, but also there's a lot of teams that are jealous of Jays fans right now, and we shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth, I guess.
No, absolutely. And whether we make the playoffs at the end of the year or not, these games right now are very valuable in terms of these young Blue Jays developing. Mm-hmm. So there is still value in these games, whether we make the playoffs or not. I hate to be the bummer kind of silver lining is kind of a lame way to look at things sometimes, but you know.
But that's where we're at.
Dog days of summer. Grind it out.
Dog days of summer.
Here we go.
Let's get over it. All right. Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in and listening. Always appreciate it. Obviously, we do our mailbag every Tuesday, so if you have a comment or something on something we're talking about, feel free to put that down in the YouTube comments. You can also reach out to us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast. I'm pushing 600 followers. Would love any of you who maybe haven't hit that follow button yet to go ahead and do so. Adam looks after the Instagram. That's the Walk Off Podcast there. You can get the audio side of this wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, the Dara Harris interview is up already. You can feel free to listen to that. She is the assistant director of the high performance department. We're hoping to sit down with Toronto Blue Jays third baseman Kevin Smith next week. Stay tuned for that. And of course, we'll see you next Friday as always. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.